Well, I think they had a nice talk afterwards. Am I still sounding hot? I hear I have hot mics here. Is this a little bit better here?
You're better.
Trying to turn the knob down. Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, they had a nice talk after the season. It just seems like it's a pretty amicable relationship. Once the season ended, and we heard that he went up and talked to Schneider and Pete, and they kind of worked things out. So I mean, look at how they handled Bobby last year. I mean, they made him the highest paid player by far. So they do a really good job. And I always say this, but it is true. I don't think that there's a GM in the NFL that loves the players more. Just no matter what, and no matter what they do. Like, and same thing with Pete. I mean, you never hear an ill word, even after, some of those guys like Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett said the things that they said. I mean, Sherman came out and said something about, oh, the kumbaya, we all sat around a campfire, and Pete said his thing. I mean, he still never got, he ne never said anything about that. Pete didn't. And then, the one thing he said about Bennett was like, yeah, I guarantee you Michael wasn't reading books in the meeting, because that was really disrespectful too. So, I mean, they have really good relationships with the players, and I think that's one of the reasons why they want to come here. So I don't think that that they would use that as an opportunity. I feel like that bites you in the butt later on down the road when you lowball guys like that, or you have them over a barrel and you take advantage of them. That's what other franchises do, and I don't think they do that here. So I feel like, whatever it's going to be, Clowney's not going to come in here mad. He's not going to, come in here and be angry about his contract. If they sign him to a deal, and it should be this way no matter what for the players. I mean, once you put your signature on that page, you go and play for it. You don't complain about it because you're the one who signed it. So but I feel like that's how that is going to go, just based on what I know about how they handle players here.
Well, where are you guys right now with Ngakoue? I mean, if they don't end up getting Clowney, if he goes somewhere else, would you be okay? Or how disappointed would you be if they didn't get Clowney and they got Ngakoue? And I know that there's an ESPN.com New York Giants reporter who's saying that Jacksonville wants a first-round pick for Ngakoue, and that might be too steep for the Seahawks. And yet, we know about the success they've had with first-rounders in the past. I would say, what the heck? Why don't you get rid of that 27th pick if that's what it'll take to get Ngakoue? If you can't get Clowney, I mean, that's a pretty good plan B. And Ngakoue, he's all over Twitter. I mean, he's had a couple of tweets today. God will always place you where you need to be, and then patience will take you a long way. So we'll see. And I don't necessarily. I'm still with the kid from Kent, Curtis Rogers, and what he tweeted out yesterday, and Ngakoue's picture from the airport hoping at SeaTac, but we'll
Oh,
find
stop
out as the
it.
days go on whether that's a legitimate rumor or not. But I'll tell you, if you're going to be disappointed about Clowney not being here, I think your disappointment could go away if you got Ngakoue.
Yeah, listen, the Seahawks have had a lot of swings and misses with their first-round picks, and all we ever hear about that is, well, it's not really a first-round pick after pick number 15. I mean, people use that as a way to justify sort of missing on some of these lower first-round picks, whether you're talking about James Carpenter or Penny or Fetty or Collier or anybody you want to chalk up as a disappointment. So let's stick with that same mindset. This is the 27th pick. So for all intents and purposes, we go with that method of thinking. It's a second-round pick. I would trade that in a hot second for Yannick Ngakoue. Wouldn't even give it a second thought. If that's what they want and they want some later-round picks, awesome. Let's get it done. But I've got zero attachment to pick number 27 unless they're going to use it to move up in the first round. Then use it to get a proven commodity that's still young, that's doing it year in, year out. If you look at his numbers, he's been productive every single year, and you know what he can do at this level. You're taking a flyer on a guy at number 27. You're hoping he can be something. Maybe he turns into something great, but more often than not, for whatever reason with this team, their first round pick hasn't turned that into much. So I've got no attachment to that pick. I would trade it in a minute.
Well, I guess I would say, kind of like they say in the stock market, past performance is no indication of future performance. And I mean, look, generally, I'm with you, Bob. Generally, I say, hey, it's a crapshoot. You don't know how a guy is going to be coming out of college and making that transition into the pros. There's so many different boxes that you have to check that aren't just physical. It's mental, emotional, and whether or not you can make that transition. Some guys just fold under the pressure. They get there and go, oh, my God, I had feelings like that my rookie year. Like, I don't belong here. These guys are way too good. And then you come back and, you know, you kind of settle in. Some guys never get over that. So I'm somewhat with you on that part. But I think just because they have failed, not failed, but not had as high of a hit rate in the first round, that doesn't necessarily mean they don't go and get like the greatest player in NFL or Seahawk history in the first round this year with that 27th pick. So, you know, I just looking at past performance, yeah, that's kind of how it's gone. But and I'll quote Jim Moore. I think they're picking players that they think will be good. So kind of like Daryl Bevel calling plays. And if they continue to do that, you know, and you could look at it this way, and Jim will back me up on this. They're due, Jim. They're due to hit one in the first round, even if it's a later pick.
They are due, but I was just writing down names that we're more familiar with, players that they have picked, whether they were the first-round pick or whether it was in the second round and they didn't have a first-rounder. And L.J. Collier, Rashad Penny, Malik McDowell, Kristen Michael. I know I'm missing some along the way here. And you're right, Dave. It doesn't really indicate. Maybe they'll hit the jackpot with the 27th pick this year. But I'm just looking at it as a possibility, because if you don't get Clowney and you don't get Ngakoue, then what are you looking at? I mean, you're looking at Michael Bennett. You're looking at Everson Griffin, and you need something else. And I was just sitting there. You know, one of the reasons I wasn't in favor of bringing Clowney back and pairing him up with Jaron Reed is saying, well, wait a minute. You already tried that last year. And I know that there's, you know, nine other players on that defense and that it's not just on Clowney and Reed to make things happen out there. But they were part of a defense that was 26th overall. So why would you want to go back and try that again? Now, with adding Bruce Irvin, I'm thinking, okay, maybe Bruce Irvin will make enough of a difference having him out there. Offenses will have to pay attention to him, and maybe that'll free up Clowney and Reed a little bit more. I'm not sure, but I think Irvin, the player that they got yesterday coming back and talking to Danny and Gallant this morning, it was an interesting, fun interview, but I think that will help a little bit. At least there's a change along that defensive line that you feel good about.
Well, Dave, let me ask you, just back to Ngakoue for a minute. Are you hesitant to move that first-round pick if somehow Jacksonville said, yeah, give us number 27 and then give us a fourth or a fifth and, you know, a fourth next year, whatever the deal would be. But that number 27 pick, is there hesitation on your part in parting with it? Because I'm looking at it going, you got a guy who's had no less than 8 sacks in 4 consecutive seasons. Those are his lowest marks, 8 sacks. He's had 8, he's had 12, he's had 9.5. He's 24 years old. He's a proven commodity. And you're right, number 27 could turn into the greatest player ever or could be just a guy who's taken up a roster spot who's okay. Don't you want the proven commodity who's only 24 over the lottery ticket?
Yeah, actually, I do, and I'm always, you know, having faith in, you know, the guys that they pick. But no, I would take a proven commodity. It's just a matter, you know, of at what cost. You know, now does that mean not signing Clowney? I mean, is that in your scenario? Is it Clowney and him and Bruce Irvin and Jaron Reed? Because I don't think they can necessarily manage that salary cap wise. That might be the problem there. But if they brought in him and not Clowney. I mean, to me, if you ask me still to pick between those two players, I'm still going, I'm on Team Clowney just because of, you know, I feel like, first of all, he was a little bit injured, a little bit banged up last year, and he's just an overall better football player. You're right about the youth. You're right about the numbers, and I love watching him on the edge. He's great with his hands. He just gets offensive linemen off of him. He's really good with that, but, you know, he caused 14 forced fumbles, but man, I'm still taking Clowney, and I would think right now with the way the market is, you know, they might even get him for as much money, if not maybe a little bit less than what you would pay in Ngakoue. What's his cap number with the as far as the franchise tag goes?
I'm not sure what that number 16. Is. Something like that. Yeah, we can look that up during the break. And it's For me, it's not instead of, it's in addition to, because the price on Clowney appears to be going down, and you've heard more and more momentum behind the idea, whether you like the idea or don't like the idea, of cutting Justin Britt. That saves you $8.5 million. I'm not sure what they do with KJ, but just the fact, if you throw in that $8.5 million, you're paying Clowney less than you anticipated by a few million dollars. Maybe you've got enough room for both of them. And we'll certainly explore this deeper, but right now let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
Guys, just to clarify there, the defensive end franchise tag right now is at $17.128 million. And then our first story here is New Orleans Saints coach Sean Payton has tested positive for coronavirus.
Yeah, it was weird seeing that news today. Apparently, he's had it for 8 days, and it sounds like he's trending the right way. They said he's got, you know, a few more days of being quarantined, but he's feeling better than he did. And so that's great news that he appears to be trending the right way. But it's just weird when you hear somebody that you're so familiar with that you don't know, but it's a famous name in our world of sports. Like, wow, they got it. It just, I don't know why it's still jarring, but it's, you hear Tom Hanks, you hear all these other people. It was just kind of odd to hear Sean Payton.
Yeah, well, I thought it was good. Right now, I cannot get enough of those kinds of stories. And I don't know if I sent you guys this article, but there was a Seattle Times article written by a lady named Christy Karras. I think I'm saying her name right. And we haven't heard enough about, like, what are you going through? What's it like? I think everybody's so scared. You know, she said, you know, it definitely came on with a fever first. So I know a lot of people that have a cough, like I had a cough, you know, the last few days. It's allergies. Everything's blooming in the backyard. And so you get kind of fearful about that. But to hear he texted into NFL Network, Sean Payton did, and just walked everybody through, here's what happened. I got the fever, and then, you know, I didn't have the respiratory problems. As Christy Karras said, the same thing. She didn't have the severe respiratory problems. And then, you know, Sean Payton was saying, look, 4 or 5 days more, and then I'll be okay. So, like, by next Monday, you know, he'll be out of the self-quarantine. And for me, I like hearing those stories. I like hearing, like, what it's about, what it's like to go through it. And, you know, I feel like that kind of puts everybody at ease a little bit.
The Red Sox have announced that pitcher Chris Sale will have Tommy John surgery.
Go ahead, Jim. For him. I don't feel bad for the Red Sox, and I know Jim now believes you've actually got a shot in a fist fight with Chris Sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jim.
That long-held belief that Chris Sale could take you out, Dave. With the Tommy John surgery, I've changed my mind a little bit. I think if you got in the ring with Chris Sale right now, that you might have your way with him.
What if I also had Tommy John surgery?
Oh, if both of you had Tommy John surgery at the same time, I still would give Sale the edge then, because I think that would balance things out, and he's got a considerable reach advantage on you and age
it's
advantage.
Just the reach, really. I have an inside game, Jim, so the reach doesn't matter for me. And I almost had Tommy John surgery last year. I was playing a lot of tennis, and then when I was scooping poop in the backyard and Hoover, there must have been 100 bombs out there, and I was holding the shovel, and I ended up getting like a really bad, you know, what is Tommy John, your shoulder or your elbow?
Your elbow.
Elbow.
Yeah, it was in the elbow area.
And once again, from poop, from scooping poop, on this show. Everybody.
It's a Tommy John issue.
Yeah, apparently so. Apparently so. All right. Hey, things don't appear to be going very well for an NFC West rival, which makes us all very happy. Could the Seahawks benefit from their misfortune? Talk more about that as we continue with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, and it is free. It's there for you. Very, very convenient. With everybody staying home these days, you're not in front of the radio the way you normally would be, so you got the app right there. So just take us with you. We'll get you through the day each and every day. Coming up at 4 o'clock, the Professor John Clayton with us. Again, Brady Henderson from ESPN.com at 4:30. And then John Palmarosi at 5 o'clock, talking a little baseball with him. But, guys, we were talking about some of the misfortune for an NFC West rival. And this is kind of how we saw it going, right? We were just talking about how these teams look going into the next season. And I said, in my opinion, I think the Rams will be at the bottom of the division because Todd Gurley's not close to what he was. They've traded away pieces on this team that just didn't pan out for him. And now Todd Gurley is no longer part of the equation because they released him in order to save $10.5 million they were going to have to pay him if he were on the roster today. They also cut Clay Matthews. They elected to keep Brandon Cooks, who's going to make a little over 12, I believe, this year. But the word is they're trying to trade him. So they're dismantling this team. Oh, and they don't have any first-round picks for a couple of years. So this, if you're a Rams fan, I don't know how you're feeling about things. This just looks bad. And before you respond, cut number six, here's Ian Rappaport talking about the release of Gurley.
At one point, it looked like an MVP with the team was basically the engine for their offense, and then a troubling knee injury that simply would not go away, a big-time storyline leading up to the Super Bowl a couple years back, and something that clearly limited him last year in the minds of those with the Rams. They have now informed him that he is released, so he gets $7-plus million guaranteed this year, but they did it before 4 p.m., today on Thursday, because had they not released him, an additional $10.5 million would have been guaranteed fully for Todd Gurley.
So there you go, 10.5 they saved there. But this is a guy, I mean, he's, Dave, I don't know what you see when you watch him. He's not the same guy that he's been in terms of the dominance, but he's certainly not brutal. He had 14 touchdowns last year, 857 rushing yards. He had a little over 200 receiving yards and two touchdown receptions as a receiver. So it's not like he completely went into the tank and he's Eddie George averaging barely 3 yards per carry. He was still a guy that was productive in terms of 14 times he found his way into the end zone. So I would imagine he's going to have appeal to another team out there. And some have speculated maybe even the Seahawks might have interest in him.
Yeah, I would be surprised, I guess, with for the Seahawks, just because it sounds like Carson is going to be healthy, and, you know, we'll see about Penny. But, yeah, that would surprise me. But, you know, it's funny with him, with Gurley. I know one of the things early on in the season, one of the complaints by a lot of Rams fans was that they weren't giving him the ball. And, you know, I'm not sure what the reason was for that. But I have to say, honestly, I see that he wasn't as effective as he's been in the past, but watching him run and a couple of those touchdowns that you talked about, I saw some burst there. I don't really know what's going on. That's been one of the big mysteries in the NFL is his knee and this arthritic thing that's going on with him. But yeah, it's interesting. You talk about the downfall of that team and we'll see. I mean, maybe they have something up their sleeve. And McVay's smarter than we all thought, but man, with no draft choices coming up, first round picks, and you know the way they're cutting guys like Gurley, and you know, look, Clay Matthews actually had a good year last year. What do you have, 7 or 8 sacks last year? Maybe more than that. So yeah, it's weird. And now we're seeing in the division, obviously San Francisco's really good, but now Arizona getting Hopkins, and you know, the way Kyler Murray played last year, it's like there's a new threat in the NFC West.
Well, I'm looking at Gurley's numbers from last year, a 3.8 yard average, not great, but not bad. 857 yards total. But if the Rams are in a position now, you tend to think, okay, it's partly because of the contract, partly because of the production there by Gurley, and he's only going to be 26 going into next year. And I saw where Steve Wyche, and we talked about Joe Fan earlier, that they thought, well, okay, the Seahawks should take a look-see with him. But, yeah, I guess why not bring him in and just check him out, put him through a workout and see what you think, and then see how much he'd be asking for. If it was a low-ball type deal, you're not certain about Rashad Penny coming back. Now, Bob, I think you pointed out that he tweeted out that his rehab is underway, and you like to think that he's going to be back at some point next year, but it won't be. I don't think we're going to see the Rashad Penny that we saw last year where we finally saw this breakthrough running back. I don't think we're going to see that right away, so you need a backup running back. So you could make a case for having Chris Carson as your 1A and Todd Gurley as your 1B if it's a team-friendly type deal. understanding that he's not going to be that splashy Todd Gurley that we saw early in his career.
Yeah, the stuff on Penny was baby steps. I mean, it just showed him doing some like little agility drills where it was very minor. It was very, I mean, the guy wasn't sprinting. He wasn't cutting. He was, you know, he was up and just kind of moving around a little bit. And I don't know what a fair expectation is for him next year. He has yet to prove that he can be a week in, week out back in this league. We saw signs that he was starting to come around, but we never saw that consistency for various reasons, and obviously injury being the biggest in a couple of years here with him. But I don't know that I'm counting on Penny. I know everybody says, well, you know, Carson will be fine, and you got Penny coming back. I don't feel that way about Penny. I don't know that you got Penny coming back and he's going to be great. He hasn't been great. He was showing signs, and maybe he was going to be great, but he had never really established that part of his game, in my opinion. I know, Dave, you're probably a little more favorable toward Penny and what you were starting to see. But, you know, to me, I wasn't looking at him as a guy you could count on week in, week out. He just hadn't, for various reasons, done that at this point.
You know, if you ask me, what Rashad Penny is missing is kind of what we talked about yesterday when I don't remember who it was, the quote about that he knew Tom Brady was a dog when, you know, he stood up and defended his sister or whatever. I don't see that out of Rashad Penny, and he is a big, powerful dude. Last year, I don't know if you guys remember, I think the hardest hit that we saw was in the Tampa Bay game. Chris Carson busted through the line, and he got to that Devin White kid who is just that dude is, he's built like James Harrison, kind of a shorter guy, just all yoked up, and he came up and hit Carson, and Carson just wanted to run him over. You could hear just the loudest crack of the pads up all the way up in the booth. And you know, and I jokingly said this before, and I did say it to Penny one time. I was like, you should run guys over more, man. Because, you know, once you do that, then you get them guessing. And he has enough talent and enough physical gifts to kind of put a move on a guy. But that to me is what he needs to be. He needs to be kind of a nasty player who, like Frank Gore, you know, I want his headshot next year to look exactly his picture, you know, when they take it and put it up everywhere. It needs to have like a scowl on it, like Frank Gore. Because Frank Gore, his picture looks like, man, I'm going to run you over, punk. I mean, that's what his picture says. And, you know, I feel like that's what he needs to be more of, you know. And he's always been kind of, well, you know, I don't know. I just think he needs to be nastier and add that part to his game and then attack his rehab that way and be more that kind of a player. Because, I don't know, he just it's almost like he's kind of letting the NFL happen to him. And I feel like he needs to put his stamp on things. And it's on the physical side of just, you know, just start lowering your head down. You're 235 pounds. You know, run some dudes over. And then next time you can put a move on him and run past him. And to me, that's what's missing with Rashad Penny.
Yeah, I think it was kind of interesting, Dave, when we talked to him last year. And it was almost like he would have felt better if he was a second-round choice or a third-round choice. It seemed like there's a lot of pressure, a lot of burden that he was carrying with him being a first-rounder. And, you know, you probably would have liked to have seen more along the lines of, I'm going to show everyone why the Seahawks picked me in the first round. And I didn't get that feeling from him. And yet we saw those glimpses that Bob was talking about last year, and he seemed to be building some consistency. And then you had the injury. And Pete Carroll, we always know, is optimistic, always looking at the bright side of things. But when he talked about Penny's injury, it sounded pretty severe, and it leads you to believe that it's going to be tough for him to come back. You think he will, but I just don't see him being quite ready at the beginning of the season by what Carroll had to say. So they need to do something at running back, because right now you're hoping that Carson will be fine, which every indication is that that'll be the case. But then you got Travis Homer as the backup. I thought maybe they would dip into free agency, one of these B-lister type running backs, and maybe bring one of those guys in. But it looks like maybe now that they're going to address that in the draft.
Well, there are a lot of free agents still on the Seahawks roster. How's everybody feeling about them? Who do you want to see come back of these free agents? We'll go through them, talk about that next. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the program as he does every day, so stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, Seahawks have a bunch of free agents we haven't really gotten into, and yeah, they're not the superstars, but I just want to get you guys can text in. 710-710 is the text number, but we've got guys on this roster that were on the roster, technically free agents now. And is there anybody out there that you feel like, you know what, they got to bring that guy back? Because when you look at the list outside of Clowney, you don't really have that feeling. You're talking about guys like Ziggy Ansah, C.J. Procise, Geno Smith, Nico Thorpe, Akeem King, Yapati. You got Al Woods, Josh Gordon. Is there somebody that you look at and say, you know what, man, I'd love to see that guy come back? Because there's only two for me. There's Josh Gordon, if he's eligible, and I still like Michael Kendricks a lot, but I don't know what he's going to be physically, and I don't think he's going to be ready. So outside of him, maybe Al Woods would be the other one.
Yeah, I'm with you on Al Woods. By the way, in other news, I want you guys to know that Mike Salk just showed up to my house and unplugged my television. So apparently,
at least he's consistent
working from home. Yeah. But, Nico Thorpe, to me, is a guy. I mean, that guy's been a captain every year. Now, he got hurt a lot last year. I mean, he missed a lot of games. But that's a guy that I like. I'm with you on Al Woods. And then Kendricks, you know, it'll be interesting to kind of hear the recap going into next year of, you know, how much did that hamstring them that they left him on the field? You know, I've probably told this story three times, but still, we did hear from Bradley McDougal that, hey, when you have a linebacker in there and instead of a nickel guy, they pretty much have to play zone because otherwise you're going to have a linebacker matching up on a wide receiver, and you can't do that. So, you know, that whole experiment and how that went, I love how he plays, but, I'm not sure if that was, you know, necessarily the best thing for that defense. So that... You know, that one I'm kind of up in the air on with Michael Kendrick. I think he's a great player, but I feel like, you know, I would rather have a really good, solid nickel player come in, and I'm not sure who that's going to be. It could be Thorpe. We saw Akeem King struggle last year, and nobody ever really played that position in a solid way. You know, Ugo Amadi is young. Maybe he's that guy. And then, you know, early on with Jamar Taylor, that just did not work out.
Well, yeah, I noticed on the text line from the 360 talking about if you don't have Kendricks, maybe you'll be forced to play more nickel next year. And Pete Carroll always indicated that their numbers showed that they did just fine with that base defense. But I always wondered about that, whether it was so much that Kendricks and KJ and Bobby were that good of a linebacking core, or if it was more of an indication that you didn't have a nickel you were comfortable with, especially with Jamar Taylor out there for part of the season. So I'm out on Kendricks because I'd like to see more nickel played next year. And then the injury concerns with Kendricks, he still has those legal issues hanging over him. I don't know if they're going to continue to postpone his sentencing date until the next century, but it just seems like he keeps getting that postponed, and we'll see how that works out for him personally. We know that Ifedi is out because they've already made a right tackle move getting Brandon Shell. Upati is out because they've made a move there, too, for left guard. And I'm with you, Bob, on Josh Gordon. He sure seems to like it here in the Northwest. He was tweeting something about it being a beautiful day here yesterday, and I don't know what's going to happen as far as his suspension, how much longer that's going to go. Clayton is indicating it's probably only going to last two more games, but I was led to believe that it was an indefinite suspension. But, boy, that guy is tailor-made to be your third receiver. We talk all the time about, boy, the Seahawks need a third receiver. Well, maybe you have one right here if they can get Josh Gordon back.
I would love Josh Gordon to be back on this team, and I know he's messed up. He's been suspended I don't even know how many times at this point, and there's trepidation with a guy like that. I totally understand it. You probably would bring him back understanding you're not going to be able to rely on him to be there for 16 games as much as you want him to, but I think he would be a huge addition if he could come back and be somewhat consistent in terms of just being available week in, week out. But, Dave, let me ask you quickly about Kendricks. Is he a guy that if for whatever reason they said, you know what, KJ, it's been great, but we've got to clear up salary, we're going to move on from KJ. Is he a guy that could play that spot, or do you look at Barton as the natural successor to that spot? How do you see that mix moving?
Well, I like Barton a lot, and I know that I've gotten some blowback from some of the texters, but you know, he didn't get a lot of chances, and look, he played. Yeah, I know. Can you believe that? Yeah. So, and people are like, based on what? I'm like, well, based on watching him play. Okay. So anyway, you know, he, to me, he's got the right mentality. He is, you know, he was still a rookie last year, so he did make some mistakes. And, you know, we saw a few of those in that Ram game, you know, the way he played the edge down at L.A. He kind of struggled in that game. But he also has a really good knack for pass coverage, you know, and he might be one of the better droppers as far as a linebacker dropping into zone than any of those guys. I mean, man, sometimes he gets great reads, and he understands kind of what's going on behind him, and that's what you have to do when you're a linebacker dropping into a zone. You can't turn around and look. You got to kind of look at the quarterback, but you also got to get a peek and try to realize what they're trying to do to you. And I thought he had a great understanding of that as a rookie, and he'll get better and better. Again, I go back to Cody Barton had the best camp I think I've ever seen anybody have. I mean, and I'm not saying just rookies. I mean, the things that he did in camp as far as pass coverage goes, and I don't know if you guys knew this, he started a fight out there one day when he slammed a guy to the ground, which I thought was awesome. And, you know, and I was
your kind of guy.
Talking to somebody. Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what I'm talking about. I was trying to sort of describe that about, you know, Penny, is that you have to have a little bit of that in you. So, you know, and to me, that's something that he already has. So if they don't sign Kendricks, and I guess that's kind of why I've been a little bit lukewarm on Kendricks, is just because if they got, you know, KJ Bobby and then Cody Barton, I felt pretty good about that group.
All right, coming up, we'll talk more Seahawks and NFL free agency. And should the Hawks actually consider Todd Gurley? We brought it up earlier. We'll see what the professor thinks about that. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.